Hello and welcome to Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch, in which two nerds sit on a couch and discuss science fiction and fantasy. All right, Two Nerds is back to discuss Scream 4.
Which, after a long break between the first three movies, we've finally gotten to watch Scream 4.
So it's metatextual in that that's the way the Scream movies were produced as well. So we're just following right along.
Yeah.
So what are the rules for this podcast then?
Well, okay. So the first rule about podcast is you don't talk about podcasts.
No, that's an entirely different film.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing is, with each time you have a podcast about the same subject, you have to worry about rehashing old territory.
Ah, okay. You know,
so
I like
what you gotta do is you've gotta come up with a new angle that you haven't really talked about yet, otherwise it gets boring and stale. So,
okay.
Like, the first rule is you've got to like get a new angle.
Okay.
Because, you know, you've already talked about the premise. What else are you going
to
talk about?
I think the big mistake is that we didn't get the Zoomers down here to talk about it too, because that's another big metaphor situation thing that's going on in Scream 4, or like Screeform. Is that there's a dialogue about, you know, like the old guard versus the new.
Right, the passing of the torch.
Yes, exactly.
Because, you know, what we had talked about in the last one is that, like, there's a lot of this is sort of loaded and targeted at, like, adolescent, maybe not adolescent moviegoers directly necessarily, but it's aimed at the adolescent experience and you know, what that sort of means. But 25 years later, after the first one, you know, I mean, you've got to kind of kill your heroine off to begin with, because she's 25. She's a mom now.
Right.
You know, and like, what you really need to do is get back to the whole, like, people who are on the fence about virginity. And so you need to like make it fresh and relevant somehow. It's a remake.
Yeah. This is only 15 years. So it's not like it's not 25 is now.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Cause the first three came out within a very short, it was like 96, 97, 2000. That's then done. And then, 2011 is Scream 4 and 2020 is Scream 5. So.
Right. Which will be a much longer period of time.
Which will be
get to see,
really interesting.
They're like having it in the theaters, which is crazy that there's no digital release for this.
I know.
You know, I mean, it's like, I get that they're trying to get everybody back in the theaters, but it's just really frustrating because it's like, well, I'm not going to be going to theaters regularly for a long ass
like,
time.
We're in the middle of a really, really ugly surge right now, and I'm just not doing it.
Yeah.
So
even if we weren't, it's not like this is a major movie. It's like, whatever, I'll wait. You know, like, if they want the casual movie crowd, they've got to find other ways. I'm more than happy to pay $20, even $20 a head to watch it digitally. Like, I don't even care.
Yeah,
I just
don't
want to go into a theater.
And we've done it.
Yeah.
We've done it. I've done it for a ton of movies. Like Green Knight, I totally did the like A24 thing, which was splendid.
The only movie
I was
that
totally
I've been
fine
to
with the money.
In like
Dune.
Probably 2 years was Dune.
It was Dune, and that's it. Because we were
You know, IMAX, and then we watched it on HBO right after. And the whole time, though, I kind of felt like I was breathing other people's air, and I'm kind of surprised that I didn't get sick from that.
Well, we did that at the
sickening
best possible time.
Yeah. But anyway, so this movie stars Emma Roberts as the new ingenue, which I mean, she actually uses that word later on, like, you know, in the whole passing of the torch. But they started early where... I think Sydney talks about it in the car at the beginning of the movie about how, you know, just sort of metatextually, because I mean the movie itself, like the first movie was about horror movies and like how people are in horror movies.
Right.
The second movie was the sequel and about how, like, what does it mean to be a sequel? Like, how can you keep this
how
thing
do you one up
relevant?
It? How do you keep it interesting? How do you...
While still having all the same cast members.
right.
Doing the same things. Like, I mean, but you've killed off... The interesting thing about this is Ghostface
is always different.
It's a burial shroud for whatever fears you want to put on it,
oh,
you know?
Oh, my God.
Like, it's a different antagonist in every movie.
Right.
With the same look, with the same face,
Right.
But that's I think what makes it scary is that it's unpredictable. Like, you don't know what's going to happen necessarily, because what's the motivation of the killer? Who the fuck knows who the killer is?
And speaking of like metatextual, I mean, like that's the killer in every horror movie, is whatever the cultural fear is.
Yeah.
It's always different, you know? And so, I mean, like, which is why I kind of like don't agree with your whole thing about like kids and sex and the rest of it, because I think it's just constantly changing. It's a constantly changing target, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, in the latest movie, there was very little about sex, except at the very beginning, one of the first people killed had a shirt off and was just wearing a bra.
But some of that is that they're like purposefully being cheesy. Like, they're purposefully being, because those weren't the Scream movie openings, those were the Stab movie openings.
No, I'm talking about in the actual, that wasn't in the Stab movie openings, that was their friend from across the street.
Oh, yeah, well, still,
no,
I mean.
But and so, like, I mean, okay, the first movie is about horror movies, the sequel is about sequels and keeping it fresh and relevant.
Mm-hmm.
The third movie, which is fascinating, is about
Hollywood,
making a horror movie. Like, so it keeps stepping back a meta level each time. So it's about the process of the horror movies and integrating the plot of the movie itself into that facade. So it's like kind of a hypercube of metatextuality, where now we've got like levels of it.
Well, because
more
it's
than
like
just the self-awareness, it's the self-awareness of a movie that is self-aware.
Right. And it's also like the, you know, the killer is the killer, because, I mean, literally sins of the father in this fascinating way, because his father's a rapist.
Right.
And his mother is the, you know, was raped. And, you know, as a consequence, I think it can be very complicated for women who have children.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't really, I mean, I get it why she did it. You know, anyway, so there's this whole, like, this is the overt plot, but this is all under the rubric of, like, the horror movie, the thing that's supposed to scare you is not anywhere near as scary as what's going on those fucking casting couches.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if maybe the original movie as written was that it she was raped by the Weinstein character at one of these little private screening events.
That's what they said.
It ends up where it's like the kid's son wants to kill him because that's their father.
Yeah,
his father.
Well, I mean, that's
not really, that's not as obvious. I mean, from that, I feel like they must have cut that part out, because they talked about the event, but they didn't talk about how, like, that's where, like, that guy was her dad. Was it his
Oh,
dad?
Yeah. No, they were, but I just feel like whenever Hollywood talks about rape, unless it's, like, very, very specifically and obviously, like, part of the narrative, they're extremely euphemistic to the point. But that was what was going on. Her mother was raped in that room that she's finally trapped in. Like, she's trapped in the exact same room where her, you know, where her brother was conceived. And through dialogue cues, my sense is that it was a gang rape.
So in the last movie, not the last movie, but Scream 4, it, you know, and I remember, like, when it started, I'm like, what could this possibly be about? But it turns out it's about the fan culture. It's about the people who get together and have drinking game rules. So it's not even the rules of the movie anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the drinking game rules that you use when you watch the movie.
Right.
Like, because we're going to watch all of the movies together, and it's going to be great. And they have these really funny jokes that are, I mean, it's aimed squarely at fandom, right? And there's, and one of them was like, you know, oh, except for Scream 5, that one involved like time travel. And I was like, oh my God, is there going to be time travel? I cannot wait for Scream 5.
I know.
Stab
5. Yeah. Oh, speaking of metatextual, Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah. Shows up as the director.
He's the director of the Stab movies, which are the in franchise Scream movies, basically. It, like, his name in it, I don't think it came up before.
No.
Anyway, but apparently he was the one who filmed the original Stab movie.
The movie within a movie.
The movie within a movie. I mean, it's totally, like, I kept thinking this, like, while we were watching, especially the second and third, because there's so much, like, there's the play set for Agamemnon in 2, and then there's like the house set, which you yelled Oh my God, it's Meow Wolf. Because it totally looks like Meow Wolf. Anyway,
Meow Wolf Albuquerque.
Yeah, Albuquerque.
Or Santa Fe, whatever.
I don't. Yeah, I think it's whichever one.
The Denver one.
I haven't been in the Denver one. I think there's another one even Vegas. In like Ohio.
Why would they put a Meow Wolf in Ohio?
I don't know.
That's just weird.
No, maybe they didn't. Anyway, doesn't matter. So, I kept thinking, the play's the thing that will catch the consciousness of the kid. Like, I kept thinking, like, all of these, like, all the world's a stage and we're merely players upon it. Like,
yeah.
It just kept invoking all of that, like, that, I mean, and I've disparaged this regularly. Like, I'm going to write about a writer who writes. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, fucking OG Shakespeare did that shit all the time.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. He's like, yo, I'm going to playwright about a playwright. What playwrights?
Well,
you know?
He probably stole it from some earlier playwright.
Oh, word. I mean, I'm not...
So, I mean, you know, my first... And one of the things with the Scream movies is like, because you have this ghost face... persona that, mm-hmm. that whoever the killer is adopts, including the voice, which they sort of give up on the whole voice changer or whatever. It's like, fine, yeah, so the voice is the same, but we're gonna, you know, we're just gonna gloss over the fact that what everybody has this voice changer.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
fine.
It's
so
fine.
That's just it's a part of the it's a part of the
world,
the genre.
Yeah,
you know, so the game is like, who's the killer? You know, like you start the movie by being like, okay. Who's been introduced that's kind of a, not a main character, but like mm-hmm. close enough that like, you know, at the end when the Scooby Gang pulls the mask off, it's going to be like, oh my God, it was all a land deal.
Right.
You know, so it's, you're trying to figure out like, like who even is the killer here? Because like, what's the movie about? And then you try and figure out who the killer is based on that. And so when the kid starts out, like from the film club with, you know, walking around with the camera strapped to his head the whole time, I was kind of thinking it was going to be more of a found footage movie, like, you know, a Blair Witch or a Cloverfield.
I thought
whatever.
It was really interesting.
And
they
that would have been really
it.
Cool because they do talk about it. They're like, well, you know, this is all about how, like, the killer is making the movie and, like, getting all the fame directly on the
right.
internet, whatever. And, like, that seemed like an interesting twist, but they didn't do anything with it, which feels like a failure in my mind because that actually could have been cool to have a bunch more of the, I mean, they show people holding cameras with or holding mm-hmm. you know the video screen of the found footage, but they don't do anything with it other than try and integrate it into the movie itself.
The only time they played with it in a way that I thought was kind of satisfying, but they didn't, I don't think they like explored all the potentially scary parts of that, was when the gargoyle guy, the guy who like has a stupid giant Google glass on his head all the time, like he's drunk and wandering around and he manages to flip his camera around. And so the camera can see the ghost face killer coming at him and he can't, you know, and then he does. And I don't know, whatever, but it's like, it's one of those, like, you know, it's playing with the idea of the way like cameras frame reality and you know, that's what the director's
right.
doing.
Which they kind of did in the first one when they're out in the van. It's like, there's a 30-second delay. And it's like, why would you have a 30-second delay?
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
So now it's like instant and that's as it should be. But, I mean, my initial thought was, oh, I mean, I think the killer is the entire movie club at the high school. Because...
That would have been funny.
You know,
like 10...
different mm-hmm. people all dressed
like,
up.
Like a Murder on the Orient Express kind of situation.
Yeah, where it's like,
yeah.
You know, a little, everybody's got some kind of motive here.
Okay.
And that would have been kind of neat.
Okay,
like,
I
want to,
I think it's time to write some fan fiction, my guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like, with the Scream 3, I had like figured out the plot and I was really excited about that. I'm like, ooh, this is a good plot. Mm-hmm. But then with this one, it's like, I was like, that would actually be kind of interesting to have a whole group of people, instead of just two, you have like 10 and they all have their own personal motivations.
I thought they've
all gotten together to sort of agree that this is going to happen.
I think that could have been a really, really cool,
like
way of dealing with, cause I mean, I feel like sometimes fandoms can be awesome. I've obviously been part of tons of them mm-hmm. and they can be really like affirming and, you know, you can find people who are really cool and you can spend a lot of time geeking out about stuff. But they can really get nasty sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. whether they like decide to gatekeep certain things, or they decide that certain things are bad or whatever. Like it's, there's, I mean, it's a group, and groups right. do groupthink. And so sometimes that sours.
Yeah.
And so like, there could have been a really cool narrative there about how, like, cause they're very fannish. They're like displayed as a very fannish group.
Right.
Right? Like they have all the, like they have the,
even
the,
by the sequel, when you have a movie mm-hmm. theater full of people
yep.
dressed as the Ghostface, which I think is a really interesting, like right there, you have all of the people who are fans mm-hmm. are dressing up as the killer.
Yeah.
Like
right.
the audience is the killer POV, or that they talk about explicitly in some of these, where they talk about like, I think in the latest one, he's like, it was one of the trivia questions.
What was the first?
It was like Peeping Tom, 1960 was the first killer POV movie that really started that genre.
Right.
And that's kind of what that's doing, is like, we are all the killer in this. And that's kind of why they talk about like violence and being caused by the media. And it's like, well, no, we're glorifying it by reveling in it, by watching it, by appreciating it. We are the killer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it kind of happens in this one where it's, you know, they have their underground fan barn party.
Right.
Half of them are wearing the mask. Like, you could fit right in by wearing the mask and actually being the killer pretty easily.
Although, you're
because
right.
potentially all of them could be the killer.
Right.
Like, it doesn't take anything but a, you know, do-it-yourself knife and mask combo
mm-hmm.
that you could get at any Halloween store and start killing people. And then you're the new antagonist of the movie. Like, and that's what Scream 4 is.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, I mean,
it's like the fan made.
Right.
You know.
Although, but they don't go very far with that. I mean, I think that like, if it had actually been the entire fan club that had been the killer, that would be, you know what
I mean?
But I mean,
that's what like the, I forget the character name.
Charlie.
Emma Roberts
oh.
character explicitly talks about her reason for it is to replace.
Sorry.
The Sydney character,
mm-hmm.
right? She's replacing Sydney as the protagonist because it's the changing of the guard. It's the new, like the millennial takeover, not from the millennium, but you know, the generation. And
yeah.
and that's the it's that passing of the baton. And so, and she's just, instead of having it be a cooperative thing, she's taking the baton and
mm-hmm. right.
do it's a DIY like. Instant fame,
mm-hmm.
as long as you don't mind killing your whole family.
Well, and kill your partner, because like she's got that like mansplaining gatekeepery friend in Rory Culkin.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, because the whole thing, I mean, when they say what was the first slasher film, and she says Psycho, which is correct, and he says no, it's this completely unheard of thing, like that. Was the first to do the point of view from the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like a dork answer. You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
like when you get so far up your own ass, you don't even know how to talk about things anymore. Like
right.
I remember I didn't even fight with the guy because I was just like, I'm going to go and get a beer or whatever. Where the guy was like, oh, well, Star Wars is just it's just a remake of The Hidden Fortress by, I think Akira Kurosawa. Anyway, I was like, what the fuck ever? Like, because I've seen that movie, and that movie absolutely is like C-3PO and R2-D2.
It's, which are Abbott and Costello.
Which are
like,
Abbott,
you know,
right.
I mean, the, like...
No, right. But I mean, for sure, like, that's, he's specifically going, taking it from that movie. I'm sure of it. But
Crook
at the same
Vandermeer.
Time... Crook and Vandermeer. Oh my God, no. Anyway, but no, Star Wars is not a remake of The Hidden Fortress. That's just, like, announcing, I've seen The Hidden Fortress. And you know what? So have I, motherfucker, and you're wrong. You know, and that's, I mean, that character is that guy at that party
yeah.
that I was just like, I'm done talking to you because you just gatekept something that was stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's, I don't know. One of the things for me that I have a problem with this is the suspension of disbelief that some film nerd
mm-hmm.
has the upper body strength to kill police officers on duty. You know what I mean? Like that, and that's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, having that anonymous persona of the killer. It's more like the Jason, right? Because Freddy is Freddy, and
he's supernatural to begin with, though. At the jump.
Yeah, no, totally.
So it doesn't matter.
But I mean, you have a lot of these horror films, like. Because, I mean, Norman Bates is Norman Bates.
Mm-hmm.
But he's hiding behind his mild-mannered exterior.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not anonymous. Whereas a lot of these, it's like anybody can put on that mask and become that killer. And that's kind of what this movie is about.
Although I think this is much more...
Because the whole series is kind of about that. It's because they obviously kill the antagonist or antagonists in every single movie. So mm-hmm. the next one has to be a completely new antagonist,
which I think,
and in this one it's like, you know, yeah, okay, I can see how you could take it. Like it's about the fans, and so this is a fan, mm-hmm. like who decides to be the main character,
right? Who tries to arrest it, and I think it almost worked
for those meddling kids or adults.
I mean, I do think it is kind of interesting because, like, Wes Craven. I mean, how old is that guy? He's not even a boomer. He's older than that, right?
Yeah.
And then. You know, Neve Campbell would be our age, so she's an Xer, and the kids in this movie for sure are like millennials.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, 10 years ago, so they're, right. you know, so they're whatever that age is. But I do think it's funny, like, there was this scene, it's like Neve Campbell, like, gets up after being stabbed and, like, turns the tables, and she says, you know, because they've been talking metatextually about, like, remakes and requels and all of this, you know, sort of weird term, like Screamquel, mm-hmm. I think was one term right. they used.
Scream make,
yeah. where, because this isn't like a reboot entirely, because it's all within the same, you know what I mean? It's not like the...
Well, it's not new actors, so it's a remake more than a... It's not rebooting the whole thing,
no.
because it's the same
A requel. Anyway, whatever. So they're talking about that. And, you know, Neve Campbell, you know, turns the tables and gets the upper hand. And then she says, you know, number one rule is don't fuck with the original. And, you know, right. which, you know, is what somebody who made the original would say. Because.
Yeah, totally. You can, like, I almost caught a whiff of Linda Hamilton off of her in that scene.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, but it made me think of, like, just recently, like, we watched all of those Halloween movies,
mm-hmm.
and I really, really liked the Rob Zombie Halloween. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Halloween 2 of his, but I really liked the Halloween. I thought yeah. he did really interesting things with it. And I went and looked it up, which was maybe a mistake, but Carpenter wasn't all that happy about it. I mean, I don't know why he would be, but, like...
Well, it's a reinvention of, you know, mm-hmm. what was something that was really... pure and simple and made it more complicated with real backstory, which mm-hmm. I could totally see him being mad about, because the whole point of the original was to be super minimalist.
Right.
It's about the slashing, and like, this is all about some sort of plot. What the crap are you doing?
Right. No, and that's fine. It's just
plot to this.
It's right. And it's like, the artists can feel whatever the way they want about that, because obviously they're more invested in it than I am. But like, but just as a viewer, like, I think both of those things are awesome, and mm-hmm. and it doesn't take away from one to have the other exist.
Yeah.
And so I just, like, so that moment in this fourth one, I was just like, well, I mean, I guess, I think kind of fucking with the original is kind of the point sometimes. Like,
yeah, I mean.
I mean, you could do it lovingly,
something like the Batman reboot was, I really liked that. More than the originals. I thought the originals were too cartoony and like.
What do you mean by original? I mean, hasn't Batman been? How many Batman movies have there been?
And the Adam West series.
Right.
You know, I mean, all of that stuff was super goofy. Batman had always been super goofy.
Like, pow, sock,
yeah.
Choo!
And so, like, the movies initially, like, Keaton Batman was goofy.
Although, I don't know if. And I mean, we watched them again. They were goofy, but really good.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that they were, you know, I really liked it when they did the, you know, that real, you know, the Batman Begins, like the whole full reboot.
The Nolanization,
like,
of it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that was a great trilogy, you know, and it did stuff for Batman that was like, it made me interested in Batman as a character, because... up to that point, it'd been sort of like a cartoony joke, you know?
Yeah.
And like, so with this though, like, they didn't really reboot it, because it's still, you know, same universe, Neve Campbell, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we've added Rodriguez as the director in universe.
Oh my God.
Which metatextually means that this is the same universe that from Dawn Till Dusk,
like Shark Boy and Lava
Shark
Girl.
Shark Boy and Lava Girl, they are all in the Stab universe.
Oh my God. I love that so much. I mean, we're referring to the fact that Rodriguez has said that literally all of his films are in the same universe. So that everything from like kids' movies to like
vampire slasher horror movies
to like whatever the fuck the Desperado or whatever those movies are about. I don't even know. Anyway. Yeah, which I think is really wonderful, and I love it so much.
Yeah, so now the Stab movies are part of that universe.
Yeah.
Which is great, because, like,
it's great.
Starring Heather Graham as Drew Barrymore.
As, yeah, as Stacy, or whatever the hell her name was.
Casey,
I'm sorry. Whew, oh, yeah. Man.
No, yeah. But I mean, I think that, like, this is kind of a jump back to what you were talking about, how the killers, the masked killers... can sort of represent specific people that we are afraid of or specific situations that we're afraid of. Mm-hmm. And that's that anonymity makes it scary because it's sort of what we're projecting our own fears onto. But I think what this does with its anonymity is a little different in that it lets us sort of play with the, like, you know, if I were the bad guy, like, what would be my motivation? You know, like, because it changes. Like, the bad guy changes every single time. And this isn't just like a, you know, the original Jason was Jason's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest of the Jasons were definitely Jason. So that's a change, sure. But yep. It's the same basic motivation. It's just now supernatural because Jason's an undead zombie or whatever.
Actually,
the hell
he came
back to life as. And this one is more like this is literally the reasons, the motivations change every single time. But the killer looks the same and is the same kind of scary,
right?
In like visually, but because the motivations change, it flips that around. Where
right.
It's like it's not so much like what our fears are as, you know, what our anger is about. You know, like,
yeah,
what's my like? I'm mad that I'm not famous enough, so I'm gonna kill the original my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And then take her place, you know?
I was wondering if there wasn't a little lampshade there because Emma Roberts is quite famously the niece of Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And they put her in a role where she's the younger, lesser well-known cousin of a famous person.
Right.
And I was like,
but you know what else is interesting is in the last movie, at the end, Dewey proposes to Gail.
Yep.
Using a cutout of her book.
Mm-hmm.
And the little ring, whatever. And in the credits, now she's suddenly, you know, Courtney Cox Arquette. And in this movie, they start out by kind of fighting. And, like, they've been...
They're kind of antagonistic the whole time.
And it's like, are you guys doing okay? And at the end of the movie, her credit is back to Courtney Cox. Because
right.
They'd split up at that point.
Apparently, they split up...
I think
up...
they've done this in the movie with the actors themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, you know... And I think that would actually be kind of neat as Scream 5. If they're not going to do... like a social media based, which this one I think was intended for, but didn't do it.
I don't think it. I mean,
but
again,
if they start messing with
like
the actual actors and like and pull that whole thing off one more level, and actually have it about, you know, Courtney Cox and David Arquette and Nev Campbell, you know, I mean, like almost like staged, you know, where you have playing themselves.
Oh
in
my
the movie,
god. Yeah.
But it's now all of a sudden there's a real killer after them.
Or like
using the ghost face, you know?
Or like JCVD.
Yeah. I mean, that would be I know absolutely nothing about the new movie.
No, I don't know nothing about it.
Anything,
too.
And I don't plan to. I mean, I really want to be surprised because that's part of the fun of this movie for me, or the series, is like who's the killer? And then what's their motivation? You're gonna find out at the end, but if you sort of try to guess at the beginning, it almost makes it more fun because it's like, with this movie, like, one by one, you'd have people killed off and you'd be like, huh, well, I guess it's not him then.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like just process of elimination, like, literally by eliminating all of the people that it could have been.
Oh,
and then
God.
By the end, you're left with like, well, who's left? Okay, I mean, because at this one, it's like, at one point I was like, oh my God, is Gail going to be the killer because she's just a bored housewife?
That would have been fun.
But, I mean, you've got to preserve the original.
Right,
so,
no, it's not gonna work that way. But anyway.
And there was one part where it's like Emma Roberts almost got away with it, and I'm like, oh my God, how cool would that be if, like, you know, the antagonist of the movie becomes the protagonist and only we know. like yeah. in world, they don't know.
That would have been
really sweet.
That would have been actually really, really dope.
Like there was a point that you could chop off the end of this movie, and
it would have been good. Yeah, no, and it's then
picking
totally
up the next movie where it's like you know the person is the killer from the last movie, and then somebody's after her now or whatever you
or
know,
whatever.
Like,
yeah,
what are the motivations there? It can get a lot more interesting, and I think that's like one of the things that they've managed to do pretty well is like keep it fresh and not just rehash the same territory, you know, because yes, it's just people stabbing each other. But I mean, you get the sense in this one, like when people get stabbed, it's a surprise. Like, you know, like, when what's her face, save the cheerleader, save the world.
Panettiere,
Hayden Panettiere goes outside to rescue the person that she's kind of macking on.
Mm-hmm.
And she like undoes his things and she's like, I saved you by literally naming every single horror movie that ever existed in response to a trivia question, which is cheating. And she didn't win.
What? No, I'm sorry. He's a mansplainer
in the gut.
Right.
And like, and it's such a surprise that you're like, oh, well,
I guess that's where we are.
So it's him. I mean, I was partially right about the film club.
Okay. Yes. Okay. But I also have to say that I just really appreciate like Craven as a craftsman because, you know, each of these movies, the opening part of it, he's like, he tells you what he's going to do.
Oh yeah. He's totally. And like then a he fucking does carpenter.
It. Yeah. Carpenter's awesome.
No, totally. But he's not a thinker, you know?
No, you're right. So, but I mean, but this is like, so they have three fake openings, right? There are three psych out openings, which I think it's a lot of psych out openings. Like it's so many psych out openings that you get to the third one and you're really laughing.
Yeah. Well, and half of it is just like, oh my God, is that Kristen Bell?
Yeah.
And you know,
it's like Cameo City.
Oh my God. It's so great.
Academy Award winning Anna Paquin.
They started out right there too, where it's like the second open and she just like stabs her in the belly and you're like, Whoa, holy crap.
And that's what I'm saying though, is that like, he does it in the beginning. So when it happens at the end, you're like, oh, right. You told me you were going to do this.
Full circle. Yeah, no. I mean, I think that was really well done.
Thinking man's carpenter. God, that's so dog. I can't even. It's super funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just because we watched They Live and it's just like, that movie is such a punch fest.
I kind of love it so much.
No, like, I mean, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. It doesn't require a lot of brain cells. You know what I mean?
But it's so good.
You can be completely high and it's still fun.
Okay, but I'm sorry. I think that 20-minute fight scene between, like, what's his name? Keith David and Rowdy Roddy Piper is the best thing that's ever been put to film, man. Yeah. Like, it's so funny. It's 20 minutes long or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. It's
no, it's it is. Serious. It is true. I mean, like it has been like interesting watching these Craven movies because we also, I mean, we didn't podcast about it, but we did watch Nightmare on Elm Street, which I kind of thought was a cut above. I mean, I thought it was well constructed and I thought it was interesting and, you know, like, unlike a lot of those slasher films of that era, which I have completely forgotten, I thought it was good.
I mean, that series does get stupider the farther it goes.
I'm sure.
I mean, and it becomes more of a comedy, which actually, you know, the Scream series did too. I feel like the first movie was like semi-serious, even though a lot of it was comedic. But the rest of them just started getting more funny, you know, because like you know, you've got the this movie with the three opens that are identical. Yeah. And by the third one, you're just, it's funny.
Yeah, you're howling.
Which is great. I mean, it's actually funny. It's not stupid funny, you know? Yeah.
And it's totally like that scream laugh, you know, where you're just like screaming and laughing and I don't know, it's great. Like I mean, it makes perfect sense why they're called Scream, because there's a lot of just sort of screaming that goes on. And it's not even necessarily terrified screaming. It's just like jump scares and like we watched the blooper reel on this and it's not the blooper reel, it's the everybody constantly getting punked by everybody else in a ghost face mask.
Yeah. Real. Like how can we jump scare the actors?
All the entire time. Like everyone. Every single actor got
jump scared. And it's hilarious to watch. Because like
so funny.
Some of them take it better than others, and some of them you can tell, like the people who get really scared. I mean
Or you can tell the people who get mad.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, yep, you're mad. You're gonna go to your trailer and be mad about it.
Yep.
Anyway, but yeah, I just like I thought four was fine, but it's obviously I just don't think it's up to the same level as the other three. I mean, it's hard to, like, there was a throwaway line. I mean, Jamie Kennedy is the guy who does all the rules and talking about the way things work. Mm-hmm.
And he's been dead for two movies now, so.
Right. You know, they had him show back up in a VCR tape.
If you're watching this, I'm dead. You're in a trilogy.
Yeah. But, you know, like, when they're discussing, like, oh, what second movie is better than the first? Oh, and you came up with a good one. Magic Mike XXL is better than the original. Than the first one. Like a million times better. Yeah. Anyway, so the person's like, Empire Strikes Back. And he's like, nope, part of a planned trilogy, not the same. And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is better than the first one, though. But it turns out that this is a trilogy, so.
Yeah, right. Oh, and I was going to say that, like, the trilogy, like, regardless of what their motivations are, or even if they have them, because there's a certain amount of, like, people just not having motivations. Yeah. People just being psycho.
Yeah, it's the millennium.
But everybody who has a motivation, it's revenge. It's always revenge.
There's a lot of, like, that was Scream 2 was revenge.
Scream 1 is revenge.
Yeah. Under the of just being a psycho.
Right.
Because Lillard was a psycho.
But that is the stated reason.
My God. You know what would be really neat is if Matthew Lillard shows up in the movie where it's actually Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox and tries to kill them. That would be
a great movie. I follow him on Twitter. Let's slide into his DMs.
Lillard, I've got some fanfic that I want you to act in. Want to reprise your screen role? Starring you as you.
Actually, no. I want him to do his, like, Emmanuel Goldstein.
from Hackers.
From Hackers.
Gibson. I feel like that's his character every single time. Like, I kind of want to watch the live-action Scooby-Doo just to see if Shaggy really is just Matthew Lillard.
Yeah. Maybe. He
kind of plays that guy in the screen.
I remember SLC Punk him not being that character exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who knows?
No.
I do love that guy, though.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What I really want to watch is Stab 5, the one with time travel. That would be an awesome drink along. I mean, as soon as they said that, I was like, oh my God, that's Highlander 2.
Yeah.
Like, no. Sounds amazing. Let's just totally forget that Halloween 3 ever happened.
Yeah.
And move on.
Right. No, but Halloween 3 is like we haven't done it as a drink along yet. But it's got to go on the list because it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Oh my God.
Cause it makes no sense, has nothing to do with anything. And it only shares a name. Like that's, I think the kind of the joke they were making with Stab 5,
yeah, I think
which
so.
Is why I would love to watch Stab 5. I think Rodriguez should get on that.
Yeah. No. Well, Stab 5 is in the theaters right now. You mean in world Stab 5? Oh, Stab 5.
Stab 5.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just did it. I collapsed the, like, fictional reality with the reality reality.
There was another thing we watched not that long ago that was just like that, the dystopia, utopia,
Bliss.
No. The one with the comic book, Utopia.
Oh, Utopia, yeah.
Where there's these fans of this comic book, but it turns out the comic book is real.
Right.
And they all, you know, that's the world they live in now, you know, which is kind of another one of those sort of, you've got this,
like, rabbit hole of,
like, fictional thing that represents, is a stand-in for the actual thing, which is the thing that you're watching.
Right.
Metatextually.
Oh, what was this called? The Drosty effect?
Oh, yeah, where it's just like, it's like a piece.
The guy, yeah, the Quaker holding the box of cream of wheat.
With a Quaker.
And then I'm a Quaker holding a box of cream of wheat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and there's, I feel like, is Station 11 like that? Because Station 11 is called Station 11, and there's a graphic novel in it called Station 11.
There's an in-world thing, yeah.
But we're not far enough into that to really know if that's what that is. But that's, I mean, I think it would be really neat for Rodriguez to, like, do a little, like, Stab 5 webisode with time travel, you know? Because, I mean, that's
really
the thing
fun.
About these. There are rules in the Scream universe. Like, it is not actually supernatural. Like, when you shoot them and they get up and walk away, they have a bulletproof vest on.
Right.
At no point are they suggesting that any of this is supernatural. Which, I mean, they could always do in 5 because it's like, that's the one with time travel.
Right, right. Or that's the one where you know, in order to, like, I mean, when you're dealing with a rule-bound universe, at least you can count on that? And that would be a way to get a really good scare.
So you have, like, the first one is about horror movies. The second one is about sequels to horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is about making horror movies. The fourth one is about the
fandom
about,
of horror
around
movies.
Horror movies. I think it would be interesting if the fifth one was about horror movies that jump the shark. You know, and then just have it jump the shark.
Oh, God, that would be so great. I wonder if they're going to do it. I mean...
Or if they've already done it, because it's in theaters.
Yeah, woo!
We're just not going to go to the theater.
No.
Speaking of horror...
I mean, and also, I mean, these four have been directed and clearly written in parts by Craven.
Yeah.
He died, so he didn't do the most recent one.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
So I don't know. And
it's the perfect time to jump the shark.
I know I looked it up who it was, but I can't remember anymore, so that's too bad.
Should have been Robert Rodriguez. That would be...
It really should have been Robert Rodriguez.
If they could have gotten him, that would have been awesome.
Ugh, yeah, that would have been really,
really
cool.
Different movies, for sure.
Yeah, because he's a very different filmmaker.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I think that like, whatever it is, I'm looking forward to it because all of these movies have been entertaining and not... None of them have ended up feeling derivative, even though they are all in themselves derivations... You know, like having the rules for a horror movie and how to survive it, and then the rules for the sequel, and then the trilogy, and then, you know, for this one, the drinking game. Which I think is just a great extension of that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, if you
really
brought up The Matrix 4, which is very much about that same kind of metatextuality, like looking at the content,
mm-hmm.
you know, within itself.
Like
the content
this, like
is looking at itself.
The, like, Ouroboros, you know? Of, like, creation and creator and observer and observed and
yeah, I mean, and it's a great way to make a commentary. And in Matrix 4, they were making a commentary on how the first movie had been received and by whom and
what they had taken away from it.
Yeah, and what it had turned into and represented. And it's just sort of like, you know, it's just interesting that's you know, that's what the Scream movies have been doing this whole time, is sort of talking about itself, talking about the genre. And it comes from a place of love. They obviously have always loved horror all the way through. I mean, it's Wes Craven, so I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is about the fandom from the very beginning when you have, you know, what's your second favorite movie, Freddy, you know?
Right.
And then you have the cameo of Wes Craven as the janitor dressed up like Freddy, because it's like, I mean, it's this, like, self-referential humor, which is just hilarious.
Well, I mean, he spreads it around, you know, because he's got posters of, like, The Hills Have Eyes, which is, like, one of his earliest movies.
Yeah.
But then he also has, like...
Creature of the Black Lagoon,
Rear
Window.
Yeah.
I mean, there's posters of everything.
It's a huge, and then...
Like, the bedroom scene posters in this one were really fascinating, because I keep looking for, like, clues. You know, one of them, it's, like, Creed, and it's, like, who's on the soundtrack? It's a
Creed,
bunch of Creed songs.
Yeah, right.
But there's also this plaid pig in Tacoma, Washington, that is this punk music lounge.
Huh.
And there were signs in the school in the third movie, and then in the bedroom in this movie.
In the fourth.
And it's a specific band, and I don't know which one it is, but it's got this sort of, like, kind of Grateful Dead, like, layout.
Looking, yeah.
And there's, like, a picture of a lion with wings on it it's like, I couldn't read the band name on it, it's this somethings, but it's that specific poster was in both movies now,
so it's clearly
there,
like,
other plaid
it's probably like somebody that, like, somebody knows Wes Craven,
or one of
the
set
writer
dressers,
or
somebody from the Swing Gang. I just learned that one. Yeah, but it's stuff like that's kind of neat, is like looking for the weird little clues, because he's no Kubrick, but there are definitely, like, funny things that show up in the movies, you know, at least in these movies. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, it's a fun series. It's more fun, I think, than the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Yeah,
you know, for me, because I think the first movie was good, but the rest of them are garbage. And
although we haven't, I don't know.
Halloween movies, it's like the first two are, you know, fine. They are what they are, and then it just sort of goes off the deep end into some other universe that doesn't really exist, and none of it matters, and it's all just sort of dumb. And it's like with this, it manages to, you know, each movie is entertaining. I wouldn't say that they're better than the last, but
No, I mean, this one, I feel
on the same level.
I feel like the first three are better than the fourth one, but the fourth one's not bad.
The fourth one was just fine.
Not on any level is it bad.
No, but it had been a while since he'd made a Scream movie, so.
I guess. But yeah, no, it's this whole thing has been really surprising to me because I feel like, I don't know, a lot of these sorts of franchises go to shit really fast.
Yeah, I mean, I was not expecting this weekend to be as fun as it was, you know, just because, you brought home, like, the Scream movies, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, we'll have a movie marathon. It'll be great. Sit around in PJs and watch all the Scream movies, and it's just, like, dumb trash, and it's like, actually, it's kind of smart trash.
Yeah, no, it's totally smart trash. Well, because, I mean, you know, I said this about Zombie, but it's totally true about Craven. He's one of those thinking ones. He's thinking about shit. He's thinking about a lot of shit.
Yeah, he's thinking about Carpenter.
Yeah. Oh, that's so mean. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. Do we have anything more to say on our podcast here?
I feel like we've actually said a lot more about this last one than I expected we would have to say about any of it, because it's like the rules of the podcast are you have to keep, you know, finding new...
Right.
Things to say about it, and it's like, yeah, I don't know, probably half of what we've said this time has been said before, but
that's okay.
I don't know. I liked it. It was good. I do think the next movie should be about horror movies when they jump the shark, though.
Yeah, no, that would be really fun. The like ones that Oh, I mean, I guess
time travel. Either way.
Either way, either one. I'm fine. Or both.
Yeah, jumping the shark using time travel. Because I mean, the rules of the fifth movie are like just. Get it done and get it out there. Who cares? I mean,
yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I thought it was interesting that very early in the very first like false beginning, the characters slag torture porn.
Yeah,
which was in ascendancy at this point, like in 2011, that was everywhere. You know, they even name-checked Jigsaw and the
Saw
franchise. And, like, I thought it was kind of interesting because I was like, yeah, of course Craven's not going to like torture porn because it doesn't have a sense of humor.
Yeah, no, I mean...
It has no sense of humor.
It's really just about the gore fest, you know? It's about how many buckets of blood you can spray.
Right, but it...
And not in a funny way.
But not in a funny way. There's nothing playful about it. There's no like comic scares. There's no like.
Although it sounds like, I mean, not that I watch much. It's quite dour. I've never seen any of the Saw movies.
No, I'm never going to.
It sounds like they just try to invent funnier ways of decapitating people and pulling off various things.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I guess
what new way can you?
It's right. It's a level of comedy that is not. It's not funny. Ha ha. It's funny. Ridiculous.
Like the in Scream 4, I feel like the gore level sort of ratcheted up. There was a lot more blood. Like when they slice people's throats, like in the first movie, like it's definitely, there's a little bit of blood and whatever. You get the sense that people are, but it's not like, psh, psh, psh.
Well, but it's, I mean.
You know, it's not arterial blood that suddenly cascades down their shirt.
Right.
And like, even in the you know, commentary, Wes Craven was like, yeah, we could do that with that one scene where she opens the door and gets her throat cut once because we got blood all over.
Although
the scene.
Although that is in movie, that's the stab movies, which he's like, I'm purposefully being cheesy here.
Yeah, no, totally. But I mean, like, I think that the gore level has ratcheted up to a point where it's just like, sort of, like in the end where she, because this is about revenge and she's like, you know, fuck you for betraying me, whatever. She totally shoots him in the dick. And, like, I totally felt that. Like, audiences across America, all the dudes were suddenly crossing their legs. Like, ooh, that's an innovative way to shoot a guy.
Like, dick havers were like, oh, dear.
I mean, and that was definitely, like, a call out to the sort of torture porn side of things, you know?
Yeah, no, I feel ya. I do think that stuff tends to be pretty dour.
Yeah, I mean, this was not... I don't think you can turn Scream into a torture porn movie as much as you'd want to. They're just not... They're fundamentally incompatible
parts of horror. They just don't...
You can add elements of it for sure, but it's never going to be... Because, I mean, this is not a supernatural horror film, right? I mean, there are rules. They are living people who all have real motivations or not, or whatever.
Right, or they're just psychos, but they're people.
It's always a stabbing knife, or sometimes a gun.
Sometimes.
And it's always a person in costume until the very end when suddenly they can take off the costume because it's their Bond villain moment and they're going to explain the plot. And that's like, you know, it's a real world. It's not, none of it is supernatural. And that's why I think that 5 might add in either something supernatural or
it's possible
sci-fi, like
it's possible
time travel. I'm gunning for time travel or both, jumping the shark using time travel.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it because I was like, the podcast like heretofore has been about, you know, science fiction or fantasy, and I was like, eh, genre counts, horror counts, sure. But this is in a very nuts and bolts world.
Yeah,
I mean,
plus it's fun.
Yeah, it is ridiculous that like a 50-year-old woman would be able to stab people up the wall and stuff like it happens in the third movie, but that's not the fucking point.
Right.
Now, you know what I mean? Like that's not a thing to nitpick.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, once you put on that like Ghostface costume, you suddenly become a ninja.
Right. You were.
I mean, it was more believable when it was like Matthew Lillard and Timothy Oliphant, you know, because they're actually athletic young men who,
right,
believably could have that kind of stamina.
Right, but at the same time, it is. I mean, even the first Halloween, Michael Myers doesn't turn into the ridiculous like unkillable killing machine that he is.
Well, he starts as a child, so
right. You know. But I'm just saying that he's doing ridiculous, like with a kitchen knife and stabbing the dude up against the wall and then him staying there. Like none of that is possible.
Right.
None of that is possible.
Right. Well, and he just sort of sat in a chair for that 20 years.
Right.
Didn't work out at all. Give me a break. Like right. He's not stabbing anybody up
right.
a wall.
Or like the thing that you pointed out, which is that like he went in there when he was whatever, 6, 9, whatever, however old he was. How does he know how to drive?
Yeah.
Like, he
it's
doesn't.
Just, you know, he's thought about it enough that he gets it.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But with this one, it's like, okay, so Emma Roberts and the nerdy film club vice president.
Yeah.
Who even makes a joke about how weak he is. Like, they are not going to be killing full-grown policemen. You know what I mean? Like, that's just.
It was also funny to like
don't know it's them yet,
watch
so it's
like
fine.
little bitty Emma Roberts fight Nev Campbell, and Nev Campbell's like assault, like I'm not using this as some sort of euphemism, she's solid, you know what I mean, and like she clearly is doing a lot of her fight scenes and not using a stunt double, like she's in there and like throwing punches and stuff, and I'm like, whew, Emma Roberts, you're gonna get your ass kicked. Like you just can't, I mean. No,
yeah,
it's not gonna happen.
Yep.
Anyway,
nah, the things kids do for fame.
Yeah. Well, I did think it. I mean, and
I mean, as a micro celebrity myself, I kind of understand the motivation.
I mean, our kid said that to us the other day. He was like, "I'm kind of a micro celebrity because I had this thing go viral," and I was like, "Oh my god, dude."
Yeah.
Oh, but I did think. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but so we've got Emma Roberts, who is the you know kind of. Less famous niece of Julia Roberts, but then the other killer is Rory Culkin, who is the less famous brother of Macaulay Culkin. I think that there's
they want their fame now.
They're right. I mean, I think that there's a level of deliberateness about those castings.
I mean, I feel like, I mean, like I said with the Arquettes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, I feel like they're
there's
making,
a lot of Arquettes.
Yeah, they're, but I think they're making some deliberate casting choices that have to do with like the real world actors. You know, like
yeah,
like when you know, I mean, they get married in real life, and then they're married in the movies, and then they break up in real life, and then they're sort of having on the rocks in the movies. You
right.
know, so it's like.
And that's another interesting thing is that I know they're both back in the new movie and they've been divorced for 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
You know?
Maybe they're just going
to I mean, I know plenty of divorced people who get along just fine.
Maybe they'll just be like
with their exes
together because it's pretty clear their lives aren't meshing very well.
No, right now. No. It seems like that would be really unfair to make the like divorced couple act like they were still married.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it will be time travel and like they'll have a kid and it'll be like, you know, they could call it Back to the Suture. And then.
Oh.
High five.
High five.